Hey, can I ask you something? On podcasts, do they play like 10 minutes of music before they start the podcast?
You say why?
Yeah.
I have no idea. Welcome to Pages and Panels, and on this episode, very excited to be talking about a comic that I'm actually like, I mean, I say every time, I always feel like an idiot, because every episode I say like, oh, I'm super excited, and it's usually, I am always really excited, but I've actually been dying to talk about this book, Marie and the Worrywart, and to help me do so, joined by the creator, Jen Woodall. First off, thanks for joining me.
Hey!
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, I feel dumb, because I always say that, but, I mean, the show, I only have, obviously, because it'd be weird if I did a show about, like, because it's talking about an issue, so it'd be really weird if I did, like, an episode about a book I didn't like, so, I mean, I'm always excited, but,
That would be really weird.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, going through, it could probably fake it, but it would be really awkward, but, I think I said at the time when I read it, to you on Twitter, like, I absolutely love this book. I think it's amazing, and, like, I'm always excited to talk about, like, how people create the book and the process and stuff like that, but definitely with this subject matter, like, I think it's amazing. It's probably one of the favorite things I've read this year, so, I mean, first off.
Oh, thank you.
So, I mean, I guess to that, it says right on the cover, the comic's about anxiety. So, I mean, I guess we'll go with the very first, like, softball easy question for most interviews. I mean, why did you want to sit down and make this book, this comic about anxiety? I mean, how did that come about that you settled on doing one about that?
Well, I actually put an anthology with a few of my friends, I think in 2014, and I had to do a strip for it, and I didn't have any ideas, and I was just like, I'm gonna do a little comic about my anxiety, because it's easy, and I know everything about it, and I have a good idea. And I did it, and I had so many people come up to me and say, oh, this strip is great, like, I totally relate to it. And then, the next year I got into SPX, and I decided, like, maybe I should take that little strip and I should expand it, do some other stuff, and make, like, a little mini volume about, like, the various ways that my anxiety manifests. Because I think that people really like seeing that in comics, because it makes them feel less like, oh, I'm such a weird person because I'm anxious about, like, you know, eating food at restaurants.
Right. And that's what I think is so, I mean, obviously, it's such a weird thing. I talked about it before on the cast. I mean, I have, tons of social anxiety, which is weird doing a podcast. Obviously, like, kind of forcing myself to talk to people. But it's oftentimes, like, you kind of feel like it's such a weird and, I'm trying to think of the term. It's not realistic. Blanking on the term, irrational thing that is, yeah. So it's so hard to, like, imagine other people thinking or feeling that way, because it is so often, like, it's just irrational, and, like, you know in your head, like, it makes no sense why I'm feeling this way, what I'm doing. So it's really cool and interesting to see a comic like this, like, essentially capture it, at least for me, to, like, a T, like, perfectly. I mean, every little strip in this, like, I can think of, like, 5 to 10 examples of, like, where I've been in that exact situation or felt that exact way. So, I mean, it's pretty amazing, like I said, that you were able to capture that. Because I think it could be really hard not only to put that to paper, but also to have it feel and look and express in a certain way that's not over the top or pandering or anything like that. Like, yeah, I think you did, like, kind of the perfect medium of capturing it visually and in the dialogue.
Oh, thanks a lot. I mean, I hope this doesn't sound like something really narcissistic, but I didn't find the comics hard to write. But, I mean, it's probably because I've had anxiety for, like, very big majority of my life. So for me, it was just like, I have these thoughts constantly, all the time. Like, it's easy for me to put them down on paper and to make it, like, a conversation with a bizarre brain goblin that torments me, because that's what having anxiety is like. It's like a constant back and forth in your head with the evil version of yourself that doesn't like anything you do.
Right, and I think that was, I think, one of the most, like, creative and effective things about the comic was that representation. Like you said, it is often, like, an inner dialogue in your head, again, with that, like, almost irrational thing. I mean, like, there's the strip about being at the party and, you know, kind of slowly working yourself out of the conversation and that, like, oh my god, everyone's staring at me. When obviously, like, how, like, egotistical of a thought is that? That everyone in the room is staring at you and thinking about you, and you're telling yourself, like, no, that's not the case. And then, like, it's just that thing, like, bubbling up, and, like, having that, like, amazing visual representation that you have in this is crazy, because, like, it is, like you said, it's a dialogue within yourself. How did you, I mean, I think that, like, again, I think that's what's most effective about this, that visual representation and working that into your style. I mean, how did you settle on that? Was it something early on that was pretty clear? Or, I mean, is that, like, would the writing come easy, but how did visually you kind of settle on this aesthetic?
I mean, I wanted to do something that was a little bit, kind of cute in appearance. Mm-hmm. Just, I didn't really want to make it, like, I guess I didn't want to give away immediately that this is, like, a downer story about some, a person with, you know, some neuroses. And I thought that it worked better for the story as well, because anxiety isn't necessarily, like, an evil thing. Like, it's an instinct that we all have that's designed to protect us from danger and all sorts of different types of weird dangers, like social dangers. But I think the problem is that when it just gets, like, totally out of control and takes up your life and fills up your head. So I thought the best way to do it would be to have this kind of, like, innocuous blob that can grow in size, or it can, like, become like the blob from the horror film. And it can just absorb you and incapacitate you, not let you leave your house or talk to your friends. At least I thought that would be, like, the best way to mm-hmm. personify it.
Yeah, especially, I think, visually, again, I think this is some amazing visual storytelling. Again, having him grow and grow and literally, like, have it push her out the door. And, like, I love in that one panel, you can, like, see it's taken over the door. And then later, when she's laying in bed and it's just, like, kind of slowly, like, encompassing her. And, like, taking that over. I mean, just having, like, those small, like, visual cues and, like, at the very end, like, having her lay there, like, spotted in that dark red, it's great. Because, again, it's not, like, beating you over the head. It's just, like, that subtle, nuanced way of kind of exploring how anxiety might take over a situation without, and it, again, working in cue, and it works. But also, I mean, it's really tough subject matter to kind of get across naturally, I think, to people.
Yeah, it's definitely a difficult subject matter to talk about at the very least, because I feel like there's a lot more awareness about it now. And I mean, I know lots of people with anxiety to varying degrees, but I think it's really hard for some people to, I think they understand the, you know, physical sensation, the uncomfortableness that comes with anxiety, but I think it can be hard for someone to understand, like, how can you be so anxious that it makes you leave a party because you get so upset? Or how can you be so anxious that you can't move? How can you be so anxious that you can't answer the phone, you can't respond to text messages? I think that's really difficult for people who maybe don't have really severe anxiety to understand.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's I mean, understanding where people are coming from and that kind of experience, I think, is really important to kind of destigmatizing and understanding the kind of troubles that come with having anxiety problems. I mean, and other problems as well. But for me specifically, I have anxiety, so that's why it was my focus.
Right. Yeah, and I think, like you said, I mean, everyone experiences anxiety on some sort of level. And I mean, to varying degrees, and I mean, I think, like, you go to college for the first time, and there's that just general anxiety of, like, classes and this new experience, but that's something that will go away over time, or you can, you know, develop general coping skills to do it, but, so it's really hard to explain, like, the generalized anxiety disorder, or the more extreme, like you said. I mean, the thing with leaving the party, like I said, I mean, reading this comic, I can think of, like, some example. Like, I was literally got invited to a party, hang out with friends, and I was there, and for whatever reason, like, it just, for no real reason I can think of, except for just, like, it became, like, hard to breathe. Like, I don't know why. Like, I just felt like I had to get out of there. I felt like it was really uncomfortable. And these are people who I've known forever. So I just started walking home, like, 10 miles, like, at, like, 11 o'clock at night, and just, like, having people text me, like, where are you? Like, oh, I just, you know, had some stuff to do. And I'm just, like, walking home in the middle of town at 10 o'clock at night for no reason. Like, I don't know why. But, like, and, like, that's really hard to explain to people. Like, it's, like, that's something that was rational to me. But, like I said, I think this comic kind of is a good idea of just visually storytelling, like, how that sensation might come across to people, which, again, I think is really, really tough to put across.
Yeah, I mean, I've had, obviously, other comics in the zine are, like, personal experiences for, like, well, all of them are. And, yeah, leaving parties because you're uncomfortable or someone has said, like, someone made an innocuous comment and your brain decides that it needs to obsess on it for the next 20 minutes, and then you put yourself in a state and you have to leave and you can't explain it to anyone. You make up an excuse like, oh, I had a bad headache, I felt sick, I have to work early. I think that's a super common experience, but yeah, I think it's very hard to explain to someone, like, someone made a comment and I got really upset and I decided I needed to go home and be alone for 3 days. That's really hard to tell someone.
Not for you as a creator, obviously you made this, made other books not centering on anxiety and zines and stuff like that. I mean, how does the actual anxiety then, how does that, like, inform your work? Like you said, I mean, it can be a very positive thing, and, like, I think over the years, I've just learned that it's something that's, you know, it's never gonna go away. Like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, I take, like, before I do any cast I've talked about before, I take Klonopin because, like, it's the only way I'm, like, physically going to calm down. But, like, I just know it's something that's always going to be there, and I can just understand rationally, like, it's there and it's just what it is. I mean, how does that inform your work? I mean, even outside of something, a comic about that, it's generally about anxiety. And, I mean, does it play into being a creator? Obviously, especially kind of with the indie press, it's a lot of self-promotion. It's a lot of, I mean, kind of putting yourself out there, which is kind of scary as it is, but, I mean, mixed with, you know, having anxiety. I mean, how does that play as a creator doing this type of work?
I mean, it's definitely a constant exercise in developing more coping skills. I mean, when you table at events, that's always a really anxiety inducing experience, especially if, you know, there's not as many people there or you feel like you're not doing well. It's very easy to snowball and to get very upset, or, you know, if you're having an off day and you're just overwhelmed talking to people, it can be really hard. But I've personally found it to be a really positive experience. I really love talking to people at, you know, fests and cons and things like that. It really, like, puts me at ease when someone comes up and, like, you know, kind of make small talk, and I feel less like a weirdo sitting behind a desk staring at people. And yeah, like, putting stuff selling stuff, putting stuff online. It was super intimidating at first, but I mean, I've gotten a lot of really nice messages about Worryward especially, which, you know, made me feel really great that I did the book in the first place. At first I was very much like, this is weird and I don't know why I did this. So that really obviously kind of made me look at it in a positive light rather than a, ugh, I'm oversharing all this like weird nonsense about my stuff. Yeah, I know for me it's been really positive. It's like helped my anxiety to kind of calm down a little bit because people are nice. Talking to people about your art is cool. People buying your stuff is cool. It just, you know, it makes it harder to be anxious when positive things happen from putting yourself out there. Not that negative things don't happen, but like, it's been pretty overwhelmingly positive, so it feels good.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, reading it, as much as it, like, gave me a weird sense of anxiety, yeah, like, I really, like I said, I really enjoyed it. It was cool reading it. And, like, it's interesting, again, all kind of, like, the weird ways it works. Like, I don't like talking on the phone. Like, I can't do it. Like, I mean, and again, we were talking before we started recording, like, my job requires me to call people all the time. And, like, I might put it off for, like, 2 days. Like, I'll have on my board, like, gotta call this person. And it will take me, like, 2 days to, like, work that up. Because I, on the phone, like, I don't have any control over, like, a situation. Like, I can't see someone's face. I can't, like, I don't like not having answers for things. But as weird as it sounds, like, in person, like, I've spent so long as kind of, like, a weird person with anxiety, having so much anxiety about talking to people, is like, I've almost like studied how to like actually interact with people. So I'm like really good at talking to people in person because like, I'm like, oh, I know this is what normal people talk about. Like I can do this. And then like with this, like I love something I enjoy talking about, like comics, like it comes a little bit easier, but, so it's nice to have like that situation where you can talk to people about things that way and then work in the, like you said, tabling at cons. Like even as someone who goes to cons for press or just as a fan, like is interesting to kind of like hit the small talk, which for me is always tough. But then once I get into like, oh, comics, like is that common ground, and then it's easy just to kind of like work into that, kind of develop that conversation where I don't think in normal situations, like, I mean, even like, I still to this day, like, sitting in a car with my mom, who, like, I love my mom more than anything in the world. Like, I just struggle, like, coming up with things to talk about with my mom, which she doesn't shut up, so it's not a problem, but.
Oh, those people are my favorite because they take all the pressure off of a conversation.
Right.
Just, like, talk, and you're like, yes, okay, mm-hmm, great. Like, it's so easy.
And, like, with me and my mom, it's almost like the perfect mix of chaos because like I struggle like keeping a conversation going and I'm always really quiet and I'm like always like really lost in my head. Like a lot of times I'll be like, well, this is what I'm gonna say next, and then I'll be like, well, I've been thinking about it for too long, and then like, oh, maybe it's too late to say it now.
So now just, like, it's too weird.
Yeah, and like, so I'll have like full conversations in my head and then just never really say anything. But my mom is like someone who like talks, and then if there's any silence, she gets anxious, so she just keeps talking. So my mom will like talk for hours and hours because like I'm not saying anything, and then she just keeps talking. So it's just like, it could be like a whole car ride of her talking for like an hour and me not getting a word in because like I'm trying to like think of something and it's going to silence. So
yeah, it's funny how people's anxieties can manifest in different ways. Where I'm very similar. I'm very quiet and I think about everything I'm going to say, and then I'm like, wait, that could be weird. And I have like these long, drawn out, boring conversations in my head. And I know people who are so anxious that they just like exude this super confident persona and they just talk constantly and are loud. And it's so interesting how it can be the opposite when you have anxiety. Like you cope with it by pretending you don't have anxiety in like a very boisterous way, or you cope with it by pretending you don't have it by saying and doing absolutely nothing.
Right. Yeah, that's a joke with my doctor when I go there to meet with him. Like, he's usually got to wait like whatever, like 10 minutes before they come in for some reason, and he always like comes in. He'll always be like, how did our conversation go? Cause like in my head before like I meet with someone, I'll just like here's what I could say and here's what they're gonna say. Then I
guess. Oh, yeah.
So like he comes in, he's like, how'd our conversation go? I'm like, I think it's gonna be a good one.
But you may stab me with a scalpel.
Yeah. So, Marine Worry War, I absolutely love, but, you also do, I'm gonna pull up the name, the Magical Beatdown.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for anyone who, I mean, maybe read Marie or haven't read that, I mean, what is that book for people who might not know what it is?
A lot of the times when I'm at cons, people are like, give me your sales pitch for this comic, which is annoying, but I've done it so many times now, where Magical Beatdown is basically a mashup of Sailor Moon with hyper-violent 90s anime that I grew up watching. So it's about a girl who transforms into her magical alter ego, but instead of being, like, sparkly and full of love and magic, she is a badass Sukuban girl with a bat with nails in it, and she beats up men who harass her on the street, and it's extremely violent and gory, and there's a lot of swears.
Awesome. It's like the best of both worlds.
I mean, I really love sparkly magical girl animes, and I also really love hyper-violent anime. I just like shove them together because I like that juxtaposition, but I also like things that are like, you know, this is a show about a magical girl with a talking cat, and there's like a sparkle wand, and yay! Those are great too.
Yeah, I mean, it's having like the mix. Even now, I think on the last cast, I'm trying to remember who we were talking about. So I have two boys. He'll be three in. I should know this. October. And, the other one's, just turned one. So, like, the 3-year-old, like, his favorite character on anything we watch is, like, always the girl. Like,
Me too.
What's that?
Me too.
Yeah, I won't get, like, in too much, like, boring dad stuff, but, like, Paw Patrol, like, there's the, Skies, like the girl, and then Minnie Mouse, and like we watch Power Rangers, and he loves like the Pink Ranger, so like he's super into all that stuff, which is like I'm all for it. But then like if I want to go get him like a Sky shirt, it's always like real sparkly, and like they don't just make like girl shirts that are like girl shirt. I don't know how to explain it. Like I would just like a girl shirt that is a girl shirt. I have no problem with him wearing like a girl shirt, but it's always like sparkly and like with like a tutu type thing on it. And I mean, if I had like a girl, like it's weird to have like that mix of like, this is this. And like you said, like I watched Sailor Moon growing up. I thought that was pretty badass, but I also watched like Power Rangers and Gundam and like all that shit. To like kind of have that mix of like the best of like what everyone enjoys is a pretty cool idea. Like you said, to take of things that might not necessarily go together and then mix them together. Cause it's such a weird, like I said, I want to have him have the things he likes, but in a way that he likes them. Cause he doesn't like glitter, but he likes Sky. He likes wearing my wife's like dress shirts. I don't know. So. And like,
oh, so fancy.
Yeah, he's a fancy dude. I mean, he's wearing, like, overall, her suspenders with, like, a SpongeBob shirt today. I don't know, he's SpongeBob. But, that's why I'm off track. But, I mean, that's why I think, like, the idea of Magical Break, Beatdown is such a pretty badass idea. Like, having the mix of those two kind of juxtaposed things and having them come together and be. And then, again, I mean, he doesn't like violence and swearing and all that, but at the same time, kind of, it's, I think it's tough, like, especially in mainstream comics now, where trying to have a quote-unquote strong, like, female lead, and kind of taking it one or two ways, like, and I don't know if you, I mean, as a female reading comics, like, it seems like they go one or two ways with it. Like, strong female lead, she's big, she's tough, she's strong, or like, it's like a Captain Marvel type. I mean, instead of having like an individual who, like, could he be into sparkly, cool stuff, but also have the ability to carry on a bat with nails in it and beat the shit out of people. I mean, it's interesting kind of to find that mix of, like, approaching someone as an individual and then, but also having, like, that strong female. It's, I feel like a lot of times it's still a struggle to kind of get that actual story about an individual unless a story about a strong female lead. I don't know if that makes any sense or not.
No, I get what you're saying. I mean, I am a sucker for, like, big, tough ladies, and even if they're one-dimensional and they just hit things with a stick, I'm like, oh, I'm so into this. This is my jam. But, yeah, I get where you're coming from, where a lot of strong female character trope that I think a lot of people talk about, and a lot of the time I think what's missing, even though they're awesome, is that maybe they haven't fleshed them out enough as a person, or, you know, maybe they are kind of, like, I don't know how to say it, like, maybe they're so committed to making, like, a strong female character that they just give them all these, like, typically masculine traits, and
right.
They can't give them a mix of, like, they can't be both feminine and masculine. I think that a lot of comics do it super successfully, but I've definitely seen a lot of things where it just seems like these are really basic characters that don't really have any, like, interesting characterization going on, and which is a shame because it's always great when they kind of, like, throw in all these, like, contradictory traits to characters. I always think that's really interesting.
Right. I think my favorite, I mean, it's a few years old at this point, but I'm a blank on the writer, but Sophie Campbell's Glory.
Oh, I've never read that. I love Wet Moon, though. It's the best.
Oh, yeah. Wet Moon's amazing. I love Sophie Campbell.
She's great.
Glory is like that. I mean, Glory, like, she's a fucking beast. But at the same time, she's, like, its ability to be really feminine, like, gentle, and, like, I don't know how to describe it. But, like, the series, like, covers that, like, her arc as a character. But, again, like, then, like, she has... you know, transform into, like, her almost, like, Super Saiyan type form, and she's a fucking badass and just, like, crushing skulls and stuff. But and then again, like I said, Sophie's art is amazing.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah,
I feel like she's really great. I mean, I've basically just read Wet Moon. Oh, and The Abandoned, which I also love. But I feel like when she's writing her own story, she has such a great knack for writing these amazing female characters who, like, run the gamut of, like, sensitive or oversensitive or tough, and they're so quirky and they're all so individual. I think that it's, like, so great to see in a story all these, this, like, wide variety of women, and especially women of different shapes and heights. Like, her art's so fantastic.
Oh, I know she, I had her on a couple times. She's like one of my favorite Turtles artists. Like, she gets, like, the most emotion out of the Turtles. And, like, I just, like, want to, like, hug them. I got a print from her, like, years and years ago. It's just, like, Leonardo, like, standing under, like, a tree. Like, the leaves are, like, blowing off it. With his sword, and it hangs above my son's bed right now, but,
yeah.
Aww. I fucking love it. It's so good. Orkins. So, I mean, I know this Magical Beatdown Volume 1, this is 1.5, and then you're working on 2, correct?
Yeah, 2 is out, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I had it at a TCAF this past May.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
And then...
It's finally done.
So what do you plan going forward with some books?
Well, I'll continue to do Magical Beatdown. And I've been entertaining the idea of maybe doing, like, a sequel to Worry Ward, or maybe doing, like, an expanded edition with more stories, and I don't know, like, combining the initial comic with, you know, just expanding it out, maybe making it more beefy. And then I have, like, a few other ideas that I've been trying to chip away at. I mean, I have a day job during the summers to pay for my education. So when I'm not in school, I'm not very productive in my art.
You're working on like a mural, right?
Oh yeah, I've been painting a mural as part of like an initiative for the city of Toronto, but my day job is I work in television and film.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's just really demanding, so like I don't get anything else done when I work on it.
Right. Yeah. That has been like one of the ongoing initiatives for like my little cast, which I'm like, I don't know how much ever gets across, but like when I started it, like, I was doing basic interviews like the normal, and I still do it for like Multiversity Comics, like what's his book, like just normal press stuff. But like I reviewed comics for a little bit and I hated it because like reviewing comics is dumb. It's still dumb to me for the most part because it's opinionated. Okay. I mean, like, I feel like it's just, like, opinionated and, like, I was getting books where, like, I would review it and be like, this book's, like, not for me, but I think it's a good book. Like, I think it's something like Sex Criminals, which, like, I know is, like, a fantastic book. Like, it's well-written, the art's great, but for whatever reason, it just doesn't click with me. I don't know why. I've tried, like, numerous times. So, like, I would have to, like, review a book like that, and I don't know, like, how to score that. Like, you might like this book. I don't. So it was this, like, whole thing. Like, and I would get in trouble for my reviews because I would write.
Yeah, that's fair. That would be a difficult thing to, like, write in a review and not get reprimanded for, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, you want scores usually, and I would never give anything below a 7 because my point is, like, one, like, there's a book out. Like, this book's made for somebody, it might not be me, but also like the amount of like work, time and effort and thought and just like exhaustion that goes into like making comics is crazy. And like to like for most people like you in particular, as like pretty much 90% of like the industry, like this is not people's main job. Like most people can't support themselves making comics. So, like, a lot of times it's just, like, a passion project and, like, something people love to do. So, like, to have someone, like, pick up a book and be like, oh, this book's dumb. Like, it's just that, like, that'd be the criticism. Like, that always bugged me. So, like, the cast a lot of time was to go into, like, the process and effort and work that goes into, like, making books. So, like, hopefully, like, when people pick up books, like, all right, this is dumb, but maybe I see why, like, it's dumb to, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I can understand that because comics are such a, they take so long, so long to make one single comic. So much work.
It was this past New York Comic Con and I was talking to, Ed Breeson, and me and him were talking and like, you know, someone came up at the table. So like I was standing to the side cause like, cons are so important to selling stuff, so I'm standing aside because I was just talking about normal stuff with him. So the guy was like, I don't remember particularly what book. He's like, oh, I really like this book. I like this book a lot. And then he's like pointing to another book. He's like, I didn't like this book at all. I didn't think it was very good. And Ed's like, okay, thanks. And he's like, yeah, but like, make more of that book because I didn't like this book. And then the guy just like kind of like walked away. Like, how do you respond to, like, that criticism? Like, okay, I won't make that book anymore. I don't know.
Like, you just ignore those people. There's always weird people who will be like, I liked when you did this. Don't do anything else. Do this because I want this. And then you're just like, I'm going to look over there now. Wait till you leave.
So, we'll keep doing this question because I haven't come up with a better way to do it. Someday hopefully retire it, but everyone that comes on asks this question. So for Jen Woodall, creator of the amazing Marine Warrior Wart, Ghostbusters 1 or Ghostbusters 2?
I guess 1 because 2 is pretty unwatchable, but I'm not like a Ghostbusters fan.
All right. Uh-oh. I guess
I'm the worst.
No, you're not the worst. I mean, for picking one, yes. But it's, like, again, probably I keep saying I'm gonna like do accounts, but I'm too lazy to do it. It's probably like, oh, maybe like 110 to like 3 at this point of people picking like Ghostbusters 1 and Ghostbusters 2, but.
I mean, I did try to watch it again recently before I saw the new one, so I watched the first one again and I was like, that was, I remember that being like relatively the same quality. Let's watch the second one because I have never been able to get through it. And then I didn't get through it again because I think I was probably really tired or I have a bad attention span or any other reason. I don't know.
You saw the new one?
Yeah.
How was it? I've not, with kids it's so tough about like, I have to pick and choose like what movies we can get out to.
Oh yeah, I don't know if it'd be like appropriate for little kids. Like
I wouldn't bring. I barely like to leave the house with my kids. So just like getting a babysitter to like go out to see anything. So I have to like pick and choose. But how was it?
It was great. I mean, I really liked it. I'm like a very easy sell where I'm like, oh, Lady Ghostbusters, awesome, let's go.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm super excited to see it. I hope.
So, yeah, it'll come out soon, and then you can watch it when your kids go to sleep.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's the same, I mean, kind of what we're talking about. I mean, to have that ability to be like, oh, there's a Ghostbuster that looks like me is fucking awesome. Like, I'm super excited. And, like, I'm super excited for my son to have, like, those opportunities. Like, I don't want him to, like, grow up in a world where it's just one thing, so...
Yeah, there should be stuff for everyone. That's the dream.
I mean, we have getting into his head that the best Ghostbuster is Winston, because he is the best Ghostbuster. So
he's a good one.
So we have like Winston stuff, little Funko things he likes.
Aww, that's adorable.
Yeah. I'm not even telling about the other Ghostbusters. So then, like when he watches the movie, he's gonna like watch it. Like, with the idea that, like, Winston's the main character, hopefully. Which won't make any sense because it doesn't come into, like, the end of the movie, but...
Yeah, like, after the second half of the movie. That's really depressing.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about it before. I mean, there's, like, the story about how he essentially got gypped.
Yeah, like, how he had this much bigger part and then it got changed, like, the day before...
Yeah, and he fought for it on set, and they're like, no. Like, he was an original Ghostbuster. He was gonna be, he was like a veteran of war. He was like a, munitions guy, like this whole thing. And he was super excited to like take the part, cause it was like a big part for an African American actor at the time. And like to show up on set and be like, ah, no, you're gonna show up later. Your character's just gonna like show up for the money. Like, don't
That's the worst. That. Yeah, I remember when I read about that. I think I heard that story after they announced the new female Ghostbusters, and yeah, it's very depressing to read about. And I can imagine how that would just like rip your heart out and stomp all over it.
Yeah, I was hoping like, my hope was before they kind of like. Essentially made it a reboot, or I don't know what technically it is, that like the Ghostbusters like continued, but like Ernie Hudson, like Winston became like the CEO of like Ghostbusters, and he was like running it, and then he like hired these women to be Ghostbusters. But that was like my own like Winston fanfic. I got like tons of Ghostbusters fanfic going. I have a theory. In the first Ghostbusters, shit, I forget the name of the actor. Oh, that's really bad. The dad on Family Matters. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yes. Reginald. Yeah.
But he's
the guy
in...
from Die Hard, right?
Yeah, so he is in Ghostbusters 1. He plays a cop, but he's uncredited. As like, if you look in like the credits, which I've done, because like I have no time apparently. he's uncredited. But he's just a cop. So my theory is, after the events of the first Ghostbusters, it was like too much for him, so he moved his family out to Los Angeles, and that's where he became a cop out there, and that brings in Die Hard, Maybe that's why he was kind of like gun shy and he shot that kid. So my theory is that Ghostbusters and Die Hard take place in the same universe.
I like this theory.
Yeah, so it could open up things. And maybe after he shoots the kid, he goes into witness protection, and then that's how he gets stuck with Urkel. I don't know yet, but...
yeah, then you have to find family. You have to fit family matters into this, like... I feel like the theory you have, like, it works really well, but then being like, and then Urkel, like, that's the...
Yeah, that's family matters falls apart.
Yeah, have to make this wacky show fit into this universe somehow.
So, like I said, I mean, I can't recommend this comic enough, or any of Jen's work. It's all fucking amazing. But like I said, if you have anxiety or don't, it's amazing. And it's a really insightful, beautiful, like, look into it and explaining it. And like I said, visually, like, it couldn't be better. Like, I think it's an amazing representation. I love the pink on the black and white. Like, it's so good.
Thank you.
And so Jen is on Twitter at Jen_Woodall. And then you can get, everything on Gumroad right now, right?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. And then, again, as always, if you're listening, if you go to the blog, I'll link everything, on there. And then I always forget my stuff, which I'm really bad at. On Twitter at Kyle Overkill, and we have the cast, so you can rate it on iTunes and Stitchers. I think that's important or something. I don't really ever check or if that's something you're supposed to do. But like I said, again, a huge, huge thanks to Jen for coming on and talking about it. Like I said, I was super excited about this one, so I appreciate it so much.
Oh, no, thank you for asking me. It was super fun.
Like I said, go get it, go read it. But again, that's Marie and Rory Wart and Jen Woodall, and that's this issue of Pages and Panels.